Claire George has a highly emotive and temperamental personality. He is capable of enormous charm as well as terrifying temper tantrums, and Avrakatos knew him better than anyone else at the agency. He knew that George was a ballroom dancer who could maneuver with his wife, Mary, much like Fred Astaire. He was an elegant choreographer, and when he got involved in blow-ups, it might look spontaneous to everyone else, but not to Gust. In Athens, he had learned to be able to predict when George was about to have a tantrum in front of a case officer or visiting dignitary. There were certain histrionics he would go through for effect. Once Claire realized that Gust had broken his code, it infuriated him. He didn't like someone who could see through him. Up in the DDO's office, the CIA's top spy appeared to be going truly nuts with anger, but Avrakatos was not intimidated. He watched his old friend as if he were at the theater, noting, however, that behind the show there was genuine fury. He knew why. The agency had been created mainly by military men. Its predecessor, the OSS, had been part of the military. General William J. Donovan, the founder, had worn a uniform. Military tradition survives very much in force in the clandestine services, where people call one another by their first names and don't salute, but they always follow orders. What Gust had done with this unsolicited report was, in effect, insubordination. He had now made it part of the official record and had even gotten Bert Dunn to sign off on it. In George's eyes, there was little question that the intention of the memo was to make it damn difficult for the agency to go along with the White House's plans. "Casey's never going to see this," Gust remembers him shouting. "Do you know what I think of this?" he said, as he crumpled the report Gust had given him. "This is what I think of it," he shouted, as he pantomimed using the papers to wipe his ass and then threw them on the floor. Avrakatos just stared at George for a beat. "You better pick those up and save them, because they're going to save your ass one day," he said before he walked out. Shortly after this, Avrakatos was taken out of the loop on the Special Iran project. A new door was brought into Gust's empire, with a cipher lock and peephole. Behind it was the agency's new component for North's Arms for Hostages operation. George ordered Avrakatos removed from all cable traffic and denied him access to the weird room. But the key operatives, like George Cave, were Avrakatos's friends and confidants, and the case officer Gust had running the Iran branch, Jack Devine, was nervous and continued to come to him for advice. Avrakatos watched with them in disbelief as North and Bud McFarlane, the recently retired National Security Advisor, flew off to Tehran carrying a key-shaped cake, symbolizing an opening for new relations and a Bible, which someone in the entourage apparently thought would flatter the followers of the Ayatollah. As far as Avrakatos was concerned, it was now only a matter of time before something blew. Gust's 3-year tour happened to come up just at that moment. Under any other circumstances, he believes he would easily have been able to extend it as long as he liked. It was the most successful program ever against the Russians, and I had taken a losing program and turned it into a winner. Dunn knew that Gust wanted to stay, and so did Claire George, who sent his division chief to give Avrakatos the bad news. "You're not going to like this, and neither do I, but Claire wants you to go to Africa." Gust had listened without comment as Dunn tried to make the assignment as the number 3 man in the African division sound exciting. He spoke of the Savimbi War in Angola, but Avrakatos knew he was being banished, and he also knew there was nothing he could do to change George's mind. "I could have gone to Claire and pleaded my case, but I knew it would have given him sadistic pleasure to turn me down. He would have thought, even the great Gust had to kiss my ass and let me know I was boss." Gust had defied George, and now George was going to extract his revenge. Avrakatos lived by his instincts. He fancied that he was a good judge of when he could bluff and when he could fight and win. And perhaps for the first time in his life he felt there was really not much of anything he could do. He knew Claire George through and through. They had been to war together, in Athens when they'd both been hunted men. Gust had protected Claire and taught him how to navigate. They had shared confidences. Gust had given George his genuine friendship, and because he knew him so well, he knew that his old friend was more than prepared to make life very miserable for him. Later, Avrakatos would have reasons other than insubordination to explain why Claire might have wanted him out of the Near East Division. The agency was walking on the very edge of illegality in its Iran-Contra involvement. If and when the scandal hit, which now appeared likely, Avrakatos was on record as having passionately warned George and the agency not to become further involved. One of Congress's biggest problems in investigating the agency is that it never knows whom to question or what to ask for. In this case, however, the official supervising the Iran branch would certainly be one of the first questioned, and if Gust were in the Africa division in another job, someone else could explain the agency's position. It was painful enough to have George take his beloved program away just when it was about to turn the corner, but the DDO now struck with a second blow, designed to make sure the Aliquippen was fully neutered. He had Bert Dunn pass on his order for Gust to break off all contact with Charlie Wilson. At this point, Avrakatos understood that George was running an operation. He was tying Gust's hands, robbing him of his ability to reach out in any way. Through Charlie Wilson, Gust had the ability to strike almost anywhere in Washington, and George knew it. But he also knew that Wilson had become a professional friend of the agency. He was now close to Tom Twetton, and he had strong ties to Bert Dunn as well as McMahon. If Avrakatos could be taken out of the equation, it was almost a sure thing that Wilson would continue to see the agency as a friend and ally to support. When Dunn relayed George's order, Gust didn't complain. He didn't say much. He was being punished, banished again, really. What was surprising was that this man who'd never backed down from a fight and who'd been taught by his mother to seek revenge at almost any cost seemed to accept his fate without protest. He didn't even accept Wilson's offer to intervene, even though Wilson was not only on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee that doles out the agency's funds, but was now also a member of the Intelligence Committee in charge of overseeing the CIA. Wilson had more than enough leverage to back George down. But Avrakatos concluded that he had no choice but to take his punishment like a man. It had nothing to do with him personally. He was about to marry a young case officer he had been living with for the last year, and by then his son Gregory had joined the agency. As Avrakatos analyzed his predicament, he was forced to conclude that Claire now had hostages, and his fiancée and Gregory would be the ones to suffer if he caused trouble. So there was no breastbeating, no cursing, no heart-to-heart talks asking for sympathy from anyone. Instead, he took his successor, Jack Devine, a 6'6" Irishman from Pennsylvania, to meet Wilson. There he told Charlie, "I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. The bad news is I'm leaving the program. The good news is Jack is taking it over." That was it. After all they had gone through, that was the way Gust broke the news to Wilson. And despite Charlie's efforts to find out what was going on, to see if he could be of help, Gust chose to say that this was just the way things worked in his secret world. The time had come for him to go, and the best thing Charlie could do for him and the Afghans was to make things work for Gust's successor. The strangest part of this sad drama is that Gust was actually still living in McLean, Virginia, just a few minutes from the main gates of the CIA, though he had been ordered to tell Charlie he was in Africa. When Charlie called Gust's old number one night, the recorded message said merely that the telephone had been taken out of service. As far as Charlie knew, Gust was somewhere in Africa, and because of the rules of his tribe, they could no longer talk. Avrakatos's next move required discipline. It's human nature not to want the person who takes over your position to flourish. It doesn't make you look good. Better to see the successor sink. But the Afghan program was his pride and joy, his crowning achievement, and he managed to overcome the impulse and instead throw himself into the transition. He set aside a month to take Jack Devine to Egypt, Pakistan, England, China, and Saudi Arabia to meet the players, and he himself announced the changing of the guard. One of the senior officers in the program later commented that it was the best transition he had ever witnessed. It was a horrible time for Avrakatos. The agency had been created to contain and ultimately help defeat the Soviet Empire. Of all its anti-communist crusades, Afghanistan had clearly extracted the greatest toll on the Soviets. In time, those who followed him on the Afghan program would reap the rewards for this effort, but when he left it in the summer of 1986, the agency's leadership had never once recognized any of his outfit's contributions. Time after time, Avrakatos had gone into the CIA auditorium and listened to the director call off the names of those who had performed brilliantly. Dewey Claridge and Alan Fears, two of the officers who would later be indicted for their part in the Iran-Contra scandal, were repeatedly honored with the greatest awards. Gust always sat in what he called the section with the secretaries and the couriers. He and Mike and Larry, the consigliere, and Art Alper, the demolitions man, and Tim, the logs chief, and Hilly Billy, the finance wizard. The whole dirty dozen would sit and listen as the director singled out the chiefs of the Contra program for their remarkable service. It was always hard for them to figure out why anyone would reward the Central American Task Force for its bloated staff, its micromanagement, and its complete failure to in any way threaten the Sandinista government. About the only thing it had been able to deliver was constant scandal, and yet here were Claridge and Fears being handed $25,000 checks in recognition of their great service.